You are listening to the epic fantasy novel Lion's Last Kill. And this is chapter 26, the final chapter. My name is Will, and I'm the author. I want to thank you for sticking with this novel. I hope you've enjoyed it. And after this chapter, there is an epilogue, and it does have a bearing on the story, so you're going to want to stick with this for one more week and hear the epilogue. If you like epic fantasy and this kind of stuff, or you want to buy this novel, it's now available on Amazon.com, or you want to get some of my other writing, you can check out one of my websites, stormthecastle.com, castlefiction.com, or epicfantasy.com. The epic has a dash in it, so it's epic-fantasy.com. Once again, I also have a blog and a forum, so plenty of stuff in the fantasy genre. Once again, thank you for listening to Lion's Last Kill. I hope you've enjoyed it. This is chapter 26, the final chapter. Boss released the threads that he had gently brought together, and the room fell quiet. He was nervous with excitement. He knew exactly what he would have to do. The machine was an hour away from completion. Then he would turn it on and change this world. There would be no more war and no more hate. The world would join its hands together and step forward into the next stage of existence. He stepped out of the threadbender, walked down the short corridor, and opened the door that led into his workroom. It didn't seem like a month since he had last been here. He hadn't taken three steps when he realized something was wrong. His workshop was dark. There was just a small amount of what felt like moonlight coming through the windows, and in this dim light he could see that the workshop was in a shambles. It looked like someone had taken the room and turned it upside down and shook it. There were tools and metal parts strewn about the floor, and several of the benches were overturned, and it was cold in the room. It was late autumn in New England, which meant it could be cold outside, but it shouldn't be cold inside. He stopped in fear and looked around the room, and his heart skipped a beat when his eyes fell set upon the machine. It had toppled to the floor, and it looked like someone had beaten it with a sledgehammer. Tears welled up in his eyes as he rushed over to look at it, but he never made it across the room to it. He felt a blow on the back of his head, and blackness came to him before his face hit the concrete floor. From a deep darkness of pain and horror, he slowly came back to reality. He tried to move, but he couldn't. He tried to moan, but it was muffled. He opened his eyes and lazily looked around. It hurt so very badly to move his head. He was still in his workroom, and he was sitting in a chair, and his arms and legs were tied to it. His mouth was stuffed with some kind of rag, and duct tape was wrapped around his jaw to hold it in place. A voice broke the darkness, and he painfully craned his neck to see the source of it.
"Hey, the guy's coming around. I guess you didn't hit him that hard."
A man came over to look at him. It was the man who spoke. Then a second man joined him. The second man was a big burly guy with a shaved head. Bosch saw a tattoo of a lion on the inside of each of his forearms as he reached up and grabbed Bosch by his hair.
"This your house?"
Bosch nodded weakly.
"You some kind of mad scientist or something? I mean, what is it with all this crap you get around here?"
The second man interjected his opinion.
"I think he's some kind of fancy and rich sculpture-making man or something."
He pointed at the machine lying prostrate on the floor. The first man brought his face close up to Bosch.
"Is that right? You some kind of sculptor? You make fancy sculptures?"
Bosch just continued his wide-eyed stare. If he could get the rag out of his mouth, he could speak the word and everything would be all right. These men looked like criminals. They were a bad element. He supposed that they had probably broken in, and they were looking for something to steal.
"You got a big fancy house, but you got no food in here. Where's all the food at? We need food. You some kind of loony? You live out here in this big fancy house out in the woods, and you're all by yourself? You ain't even got a television."
He let go of Bosch's hair and turned to his companion.
"I don't think he's no fancy sculpture. I think he's one of those loonies that makes a lot of money then comes to live out in the woods."
The second man laughed at this, and the tattooed man continued his taunt.
"You trying to get away from the rat race? You ain't even got a television. Maybe you tried to escape the rat race, but you can't, because the rat race has come to you."
Again he turned and spoke to his companion.
"I don't think he knows what's going on in the world. He's been cooped up in his little hideaway running from the world, and he got no TV. Is that right? Again he grabbed Basha's hair. You don't know what's going on. You got no TV. Well, I got news for you, mister. The days of you rich types living your fancy lives has come to an end. Matter of fact, it has all come to an end. Maybe you ain't heard, but the world has gone to shit in the past few days. One of them Middle East countries dropped a nuclear bomb on another one. And the other country released one of those biological weapons into the air. People dying everywhere. They say that most of the world are going to be dead in less than a week. Some countries dropped more of them nuclear bombs on their own people to try and stop the infections, but it didn't work. It's spreading and everybody's dying. The world is just plain fucked. The armies are all fighting each other. There's no electricity anywhere in the world and the cities have gone to rioting. Yep, people just enjoying themselves before the end. He kicked Basha in the chest and Basha just fell over, still tied to the chair. He was lying on his back and staring up at the ceiling. The man came around the chair and crouched over him, then looked at his partner. This guy ain't got shit. He got no TV, no food, no nothing. Torch this place and we're out of here. Get only a couple of days left, might as well enjoy him. He grabbed Basha by the hair again and Basha couldn't look him in the eyes. He just stared at the tattoo of the lion on the inside of the man's forearm. I'm going to do you a big favor, mister. Dying in the fire is a bad way to go, so I'm going to make it easy on you. Even though you're probably one of them rich bastards that ruin the world. His buddy snickered at this comment. Basha couldn't see the other man, but he could hear him tinkering with a lighter near one of the overturned benches. Basha slowly looked down the man's forearm, past the tattoo to the hand that held a knife. He lay there helpless, with his mouth gagged and his head thrumming from the blow he got earlier, and he wished he could speak one word. One word of love would be all it would take for everything to change. It would change these men. They would see the truth and feel the love. They would help him to fix the machine. And maybe there really was war going on. Maybe there was some kind of biological weapon released into the world. People would die, but some would survive. And as soon as the machine was on, the fighting and the hate would stop. When the worst was done, the people that remained would build a new world, one based on love and understanding. A calm came over Basha, and he just pointed love at the man with his eyes, and watched as the man grabbed his hair and pulled his head back to expose his throat. Believe me, man, this is better than fire. With one quick slash, he cut a deep slice in Basha's throat, and a severed artery shot a burst of red into the air. The lion tattoo got up and spoke to his partner. Come on, man. We're out of here. There's nothing here. Let the fire burn it down. Basha had been through so much this past month. Everything had been a struggle, but it was all for a pure reason. He had undergone this with nothing but the best intentions, yet it was now all coming to a close. He wondered if the Oracle knew that this was the way it would end for him. Did he have any choice in the matter? Was there any such thing as free will? Or was it all illusion? Was everything preordained? Were all the decisions made at the time of the making of the universe? He found this hard to believe. If there was no individual choice in life, and there was no other path that he could take, then why had the Oracle been sending him warnings about the lion? Surely it was to give him a chance to change his path, a chance to find the right path. But he had failed, and now he would die without spreading the word that could save them all. Since learning the word, he had puzzled over the balance of life. How would balance be maintained? Would it be possible for the world to become a place of love and understanding without upsetting that balance? The answer to this came to him now. One world would be saved, and one world would not. This was the balance, and it would always be maintained. He rushed deeper into himself, and thought that this held true with him as a single person. One life was created, and now his was forfeit. His head was tilted toward the machine, and in the growing orange light of fire, he looked at it as it lay on its side. There were liquids flowing from it, just as they were flowing from him. Both he and the machine were dying at the same time for the same reasons, and by the hands of the same men. Basha lay in his chair, feeling the life go out of him. He watched as flame started to make flickers in the room, and he felt the blood run out of him. In the darkness, he heard the simple sounds of an old friend. It was a cricket, and a big male at that. Maybe it was the same one that had sung for him before he had left that long month ago. Maybe it was the one that had seemed to like the thrumming of the machine so much. Love burst from his heart for the cricket. Everything was so beautiful. The flames licked at the walls with the beauty of life. The wind came through from somewhere and it sang a song to him that was beautiful. The cricket sang its song, and that was beautiful. He just listened and looked, and everything made a complex symphony of beauty that was a joy to his dying heart. He focused his waning attention on the song of the cricket. It showed its love to the world and the language, and Bosch cried at the joy of it. The cricket was right. It knew the truth of things, and now, for the first time in his life, Bosch knew the truth of things. All the things he had chased up until then were meaningless. There were things in life that were so beautiful that a person had to stop and appreciate them. But all his life he had not been able to see or understand those things. He had been deaf to those things until the word was spoken and he was awakened. He watched the spurts of blood as they squirted out on the floor, and with his vision sense he counted out a rhythm. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And with his sound sense, he counted out the thrum of the cricket song. To his groggy senses, he counted 18 pulses of blood. His sound sense told him that this time the cricket had chirped 22 times. He did a calculation and came up with a temperature of 59. 59, he thought to himself. It is rather cold in the house. Maybe he left a window open somewhere. He called to Babbage to make a note for him to go around the house and check the windows, but darkness faded on him, and Babbage never responded. The end.